a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your patience. And the South Dakota Senate will now come to order. And leading us in our prayer today is Dottie Nordemir, who is chaplain at St. Mary's Healthcare Center here in Pierre. And Joey Kanofsky is our page, leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance to our nation's flag.
Let us pray. Dear God, as the Senate begins this session, we pray for wisdom and courage. We pray for your Spirit to guide our words and actions. Help us to be people of integrity and faithfulness. Bless these dedicated senators with listening hearts and a spirit of cooperation. God, we give thanks for the gifts and talents you have given each one, and we are thankful for their willingness to share those gifts and talents in serving the citizens of South Dakota and all the issues that touch our lives. Amen.
Amen.
Secretary will call the roll, please.
Adelstein, Begalka, Bradford, Brown, Buell, Cutler, Ferricks, Frisley, Gray, Hansen, Haverly, Heineman, Holeen, Hunstead, Hunhoff, Johnston, Junkie, Kraus, Krebs, Lederman, Maher, Nelson, Norstrup, Nygaard, Olson, Peters, Putnam, Rampelberg, Rave, Roden, Schleckaway, Sutton, Tiedemann, Teason, Valley. Quorum present, Mr. President.
Approval of the journal.
Mr. President, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that the Secretary of the Senate has had under consideration the Senate Journal of the 11th day. All errors, typographical or otherwise, are duly marked in the temporary journal for correction, and we hereby move adoption of the report. Bob Gray, Chair.
All those in favor of adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being in your capital, and as I'm fond of saying, the Senate, you had a choice between this and another body, and we're proud of you for making the right choice. On behalf of all of us here, especially, it's great to see so many friends here with AARP. We welcome the AARP volunteers, their executive director, Sarah Jennings, from all over the state of South Dakota. They're from Sioux Falls, Hartford, Mitchell, Armour, Yankton, T, Wagner, Custer, Rapid City Pier, Whitewood, Blackhawk, Phillip, Clear Lake, Millbank, Huron, Watertown, Mansfield, and we could go on and on. I'm sure if we've missed somebody, I apologize. And we thank you so much for the incredible lunch that helped us out a great deal. Thank you very much. AARP. Thank you very much, and Volunteer President, Mr. Eznick, good to see you again, sir. Thank you. We'd also like to welcome on behalf of Senator Brown the Ipswich Junior Government class. We saw them touring around, and their instructor, Angie Kulesa. Ipswich, would you please stand? Where are they? Oh, here we are. Welcome. That's great. And Dr. Bjordahl, are you here? Oh, hi, Kevin. Good to see you again, and thank you for taking care of us. We have a doctor of the day here, and Dr. Kevin Bjordahl is from Millbank, and they volunteer their day, take their day off of from their clinic and their patients to take care of us. And the crud's going around, so we thank you for taking care of us very much. Dr. Bjordahl.
Thank you, Mr. President. Personal privilege.
Granted, Senator.
Thank you. Just wanted to introduce my mother. Marilyn Schleckaway is here from Mobridge, looking over me like always.
That's excellent.
And my dad was going to come, and then he got summoned to jury duty. So public service at its finest, I guess.
Knowing your father, he would be a great juror. So he would. Mr. Schleckaway, no throwing of things at him. Okay. It's just kind of, it's a new rule this year. Thank you. Also, on behalf of of all of us, but Senator Thiessen brought me the note. We have a South Dakota Veterinary Medical Association representing veterinarians across the state. Dr. Twittero, George Twittero, they're right behind me, Penny Dye, and Christy Teets. Hopefully I pronounced that all right, correctly, all three of them. The Veterinarian Medical Association. Thank you. Okay, that's all I have here. Any other personal privileges? Okay, thank you very much. And again, everyone, welcome. Reports of standing committees, ma'am.
Mr. President, the Committee on Education reports it has had under consideration Senate Bill 106 and recommends do pass as amended. Senate Bill 165 recommends it be referred to the Committee on Appropriations. Bob Gray, Vice Chair. The Committee on Commerce and Energy reports it has had under consideration Senate Bill 11 and recommends do pass as amended. Senate Bill 103 recommends do pass as amended. 115, do pass as amended and place on the consent calendar. And 109, which was deferred to the 36th day, Senator Nygaard, Chair. The Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources reports House Bill 1003, do pass. 1011, 1012, and 1013, do pass and place on the consent calendar. Senate Bills 88 and 129, deferred to the 41st legislative day, Senator Krebs, Chair. The Committee on Judiciary reports Senate Bill 149, do pass. 68, do pass as amended. 76, do pass as amended. 86, do pass as amended. Senator Thiessen, Chair. Mr. President, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that the Office of Engrossing and Enrolling has carefully compared Senate Bill 18 and finds the same correctly enrolled. Bob Gray, Chair.
Messages.
Mr. President, I have the honor to return here with Senate Bill 18, which has passed the House without change. And House Bills 1005, 1018, 1027, 1040, 1042, 1043, 1044, 1057, 1077, 1078, and 1094, which have passed the House, and your favorable consideration is respectfully requested. Karen Gerdes, Chief Clerk.
Especially for our students, we're going through mostly housekeeping at the beginning, and then now we're on to what are called motions and resolutions, and then we'll get on to the bills. So motions and resolutions, ma'am.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 1, a concurrent resolution honoring the University of South Dakota on its 150th anniversary. Senator Nygaard moves that Senate Concurrent Resolution 1 as found on page 209 of the Senate Journal be adopted.
Is there a second? Comments on that motion? Senator Goyotes Nygaard.
Thank you. Thank you, all you Yotes and Jackrabbits, too, in this great forum here. Whereas the first Dakota Territorial Legislature, which convened in Yankton in the early months of 1862, and whose members recognizing quality education would be vital to the development of Dakota Territory, approved legislation authorizing, though not funding, what would become the University of South Dakota in the town of Vermilion, located along the Missouri River in Clay County, to which territorial governor William Jayne, who had been Abraham Lincoln's personal physician in Springfield, Illinois, affixed his signature on April 21st, 1862. Now, I'm not going to read all of this, but I'm going to point out one other whereas. The university's commitment to fostering better state government is exemplified in the contributions of renowned political science professor W.O. Farber, the founder and first director of the Legislative Research Council and stellar member of the Constitutional Revision Commission. At any rate, I invite you to join me in voting in favor of this concurrent resolution recognizing 150 years of excellence down by the river in Vermilion, South Dakota. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further remarks? Hearing no further remarks, the question before the Senate is Senator Nygaard's motion that SCR 1 be adopted. Those in favor of adoption will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Adelstein. Begalka.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Bew.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Frisley.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Heinemann.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Hunstan.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Krause.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Nelson.
Yeah.
Norstrup.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Schleckowee.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Tiedemann. Teason.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
Okay.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
Mr. President, there were ayes 34, excused 1.
Thank you, Senator Nygaard's motion SCR 1 be adopted. Having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed, and SCR 1 is so adopted. Consideration reports of committees, please.
Senator Olson moves that the reports of the standing committees on transportation on Senate Bill 22 is found on page 206 of the Senate Journal. Taxation on Senate Bill 91 is found on page 208 of the Senate Journal. Local government on Senate Bill 102 is found on page 207 of the Senate Journal. Local government on 101 is found on page 207 of the Senate Journal be adopted.
All those in favor of adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 1005, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the excuse from attendance of children receiving alternative instruction. House Bill 1018, an act to repeal certain obsolete or unnecessary provisions pertaining to the Department of Game, Fish and Parks. 1057, an act to revise certain provisions concerning the manner in which county wheel taxes are imposed. 1077, an act to authorize municipalities to establish incidental accounts. 1044, an act to repeal certain statutes relating to the Bureau of Intergovernment Relations. 1027, an act to repeal certain outdated or unnecessary statutes related to the Division of Behavioral Health within the Department of Social Services. 1078, an act to allow certain structures or facilities previously used as an elevator to be classified as agricultural property. 1040, an act to make an appropriation for the payment of extraordinary litigation expenses and to declare an emergency. 1042, an act to repeal certain obsolete statutes relating to the State Cement Plant Commission. 1043, an act to repeal certain provisions regarding the full-time equivalent staffing report.
President pro tem is assigned, and the President announces the following assignments. House Bill 1018, Agriculture and Natural Resources. Appropriations receives House Bills 1040, 1042, and 1043. Education is assigned House Bill 1005, Health and Human Services, House Bills 1027. Local Government, House Bills 1057, 1077, 1094. State Affairs 1044 and 1078. I should have said to our students that these bills have passed the House and are coming over here now for the Senate's consideration. The next item of our business is the second reading of consent calendar items. These are Senate bills that have been passed by committee, and they passed unanimously. And they're put by the committee on a consent calendar, which means there's no debate. Questions may be asked, or any senator could pull off the bill, and it could be debated tomorrow. And we have four of those bills today, and so I'll call those up right now. The consent calendar, Madam Secretary.
Senate Bill 83, an act to revise certain provisions relating to water development districts. 140, an act to repeal certain provisions regarding glazing material on motorcycle windshields and wind deflectors. 104, an act to revise certain provisions concerning the investment of public funds. 73, an act to repeal the provisions regarding the assessment of real property located in a floodplain.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Senate Bills 83, 140, 104, and 73, having received a second reading, are up for consideration and final passage. Are there any questions? Hearing none, the question before the Senate is final passage of House Bills 83, 104, 140, and 73. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will please call the roll.
Adelstein.
Aye.
Bigalka.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buell.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Frisley.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Heinemann.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Hunstad.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Kraus.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Norstrup.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Schleckaway.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Tiedemann. Thiessen.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Mr. President, there were ayes 34, one excused.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Senate Bills 83, 140, 104, and 73, having received a majority vote of the members elect, are hereby declared passed. Are there any questions on the title? Hearing none, the titles are deemed approved. Second reading of Senate Bills. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our debate calendar. Please proceed.
Senate Bill 35, an act to update certain citations to federal regulations and increase certain civil penalties regarding pipeline safety inspection.
Senate Bill 35, having received a second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Senator, I pass Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good afternoon. Members of the Senate, Senate Bill 35 enjoyed a brief time on the consent calendar, but it was rightfully pulled. So I can explain it to you a little bit today. It comes to us from the Public Utilities Commission through the Committee on Commerce and Energy. Senate Bill 35 updates the citations to federal regulations and laws regarding intrastate pipeline safety inspections. As a result of the updated citations, the PUC will be able to enforce new federal safety laws and regulations that went into effect January 1 of 2011. In addition, the bill increases the maximum civil penalties that may be imposed by the PUC in Section 5. The bill seeks to increase the maximum fines that can be levied against a pipeline operator that violates a safety rule or law. The maximum civil penalties are increased from $10,000 to $100,000 for each day, for each violation and each day that occurs. The PUC has been asked by the Federal Pipeline Safety Administration to raise the penalty amounts in an effort to strengthen enforcement across the nation. If South Dakota penalties limits were not raised, our federal funding would be decreased. Our pipeline safety program is funded with federal funds and assessments on the pipeline operators. To the extent federal funding is reduced, the pipeline operators would have to pay more. With that, I encourage your support for Senate Bill 35. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you for understanding pulling that off of consent. It does require a two-thirds majority vote. Further remarks? Hearing no further remarks, the question before the Senate is final passage of Senate Bill 35. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Again, it requires two-thirds majority vote for passage. The Secretary, please call the roll.
Adelstein.
Aye.
Bigalka.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buell.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Frisley.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Heinemann.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Hunstad.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Kraus.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Norstrup.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Schleckaway.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Tiedemann. Thiessen.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Mr. President, there were ayes 34, excused 1.
Senate Bill 35, having received a two-thirds majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, the title is deemed approved.
Senate Bill 65, an act to revise the list of products offered to consumers by motor vehicle dealers and sales finance companies.
Thank you. Senate Bill 65, having received a second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Senator Rampelberg, good afternoon, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 65 is brought to you I'm bringing it to you on behalf of the South Dakota Auto Dealers Association. This is a product that they would like to offer. It's a product that's offered by an insurance company out of Omaha called Central States of Omaha, but it's not an insurance product. It is a fee-based product, so it is not subject to insurance license regulations. The product would be something that would be part of a cafeteria or a list of products that could be purchased at the time a person bought a car. The product would actually be supplied, currently it's being supplied through a bank and a credit union. And what the auto dealers are looking for is an opportunity to provide this product through their captive finance companies like Ford Motor Credit, Toyota Credit, those kinds of companies. The issue really boils around, from our viewpoint anyway, what would be the regulatory oversight of this product. Now, in the banking business, what happens is the bank actually acquires the product from Central States in this particular case, although other companies could provide a similar product. This Central States also provides most of the credit group life insurance to the auto dealers and the banks. And this product would be one that's not an insurance product because it only covers accidental death, disablement, and loss of job. It would not cover normal death, if you will. The oversight would come from, in the case of a bank, from the regulatory, whichever regulatory office would regulate the bank. In the case of an insurance company, it's got regulatory oversight for all the insurance companies from the state as well as the federal level. And in the case of the captives, they've got the SEC that's going to be auditing them, and I know that they'll have other regulatory bodies that were regulated as well. I just, offhand, can't tell you what they are. But the product will be regulated by the company that actually purchases the loan, with their regulatory bodies. So the captive finance companies would be a part of this. We're actually making this a part of the Money Lending Licensing Act. Only includes banks and credit unions, and this would allow the captive finance companies to be a part of it. I think it's a pretty innocuous, straightforward, that is under adequate supervision, and I would urge your support of Senate Bill 65. Thank you.
Thank you. Further remarks? Hearing no further remarks, the question before the Senate is final passage of Senate Bill 65. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Adelstein.
Aye.
Begalka.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buell.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Frisley.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Hunstead.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Krause.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Nordstrup.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Yes.
Olson.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Schleckaway.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Tiedemann. Thiessen.
Aye.
Bally.
Aye.
Mr. President, there were ayes 34, excused 1.
Thank you. Senate Bill 65, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, the title is deemed approved.
Senate Bill 38, an act to provide for the transfer of control of an office building in Rapid City to make an appropriation for the construction and renovation of the office building and to declare an emergency.
Senate Bill 38, having received a second reading, is up for consideration, final passage. Are there any remarks?
Mr. President.
Senator Haverly, good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good afternoon. Senate Bill 38 is an act to provide for the transfer of a building between two state agencies. The Division of Wild Land Fire Suppression currently operates the Black Hills Interagency Dispatch Center located on the grounds of the Rapid City Regional Airport. The division received notice on April 14th of 2009 that it was being evicted from the airport properties and was to be vacated by October 31st, 2013. In June of 2011, the South Dakota Department of Game, Fish, and Parks completed construction of its new Rapid City Outdoor Campus and Regional Office Facility. As the Game, Fish, and Parks relocated to the Rapid City facility, the previously occupied regional office properties were vacated. And this gave an opportunity for the Department of Agriculture, who entered into a lease agreement with the Game, Fish, and Parks, to occupy the vacated properties. For the Department of Agriculture, the lease agreement provided the solution to facilities needs of the Wild Land Fire Suppression Division. Section 1 of Senate Bill 38 asked for the legislative approval authorizing the South Dakota Department of Agriculture to take full control or ownership of the vacated Game, Fish, and Parks property. Section 2 of the bill appropriates $400,000 to the Department of Agriculture for the purpose of designing, renovating, constructing, furnishing, and equipping office facilities on the property. I ask for your full support of Senate Bill 38. This is a good opportunity to utilize some state buildings. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further remarks? Hearing no further remarks, the question before the Senate is final passage of Senate Bill 38. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Adelstein,
aye.
Igalka,
aye.
Bradford,
aye.
Brown,
aye.
Buell,
aye.
Cutler,
aye.
Frerichs,
aye.
Frisley,
aye.
Gray,
aye.
Hansen,
aye.
Haberle,
aye.
Heinemann,
aye.
Holine,
aye.
Hunstead. Hunhoff, Johnston,
aye.
Junkie,
aye.
Krause,
aye.
Krebs,
aye.
Lederman,
aye.
Maher,
aye.
Nelson,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Nygaard,
aye.
Olson,
aye.
Peters,
aye.
Putnam,
aye.
Rampelberg, Rave,
aye.
Roden,
aye.
Schleckaway,
aye.
Sutton,
aye.
Tiedemann, Thiessen,
aye.
Valley,
aye.
Mr. President, there were ayes 31, nays 2, 2 excused.
Thank you. Senate Bill 38, having received a two-thirds majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Are there any questions on the title? Hearing none, the title is deemed approved.
Senate Bill 78, an act to allow an arrest to be expunged when the criminal case is dismissed.
Senate Bill 78, having received a second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Senator Rolson.
Thank you, Mr. President, and ladies and gentlemen in the body. Every one of us waits in between our time here in Pierre and when we return for that truly great constituent issue that you can say to your colleagues, this is a great constituent issue. It's the reason we're all here, is to represent the men and women back home that vote for us and even those that don't vote for us. I've got one of those great cases right now, a great constituent story that comes to me, and maybe I'll ask for your indulgence not to raise your eyebrows as I did when I first heard about this story. I've got a constituent who was in college at Dakota State University, and this is a wrong place, wrong time story. And this bill, Senate Bill 78, deals with the expungement of records. And what happened to this young lady is that she truly was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Her companion in the vehicle had a large amount of illegal drugs in the car, unbeknownst to her. At a traffic stop, the officer came up and upon his investigation, found that there was a large amount of illegal drugs in there. So everybody is taken to jail, and my constituent pled her case that she not only didn't know about the drugs in the car, didn't know her companion did or sold drugs, and was so vehement about it, she offered a urinary analysis, a blood test, and even a polygraph to prove to the prosecuting attorney that she had no knowledge of the drugs. And it turns out, at her expense, they found out that she truly did not know about that. Where does this go? And why is that such a big deal? She's innocent, right? Well, not necessarily. My constituent then goes on and graduates from college at DSU, and I don't know the specific employer that she was looking to be employed by, but let's use, say it's Dakota Care, Farmar, Bayer, that she goes in and in her pre-employment interview sits down with her folks, and they're interviewing her, and they love her. They offer her the job. Happened twice to her. And in the final paperwork, they ask her, have you ever been arrested for felony drug possession? She has to check yes, because she had been arrested. She was never tried or found guilty of that. The prosecuting attorney dropped the charges. But that record still shows that she was arrested for that. And what we're trying to do here, folks, isn't trying to muddy any deals that have been made between prosecuting attorneys and defense attorneys. This is truly that great constituent bill that we all wait for. It's something that you can have an impact on somebody's life for the rest of their life, cleaning their good name up. In Senate Bill 78, in Section 1, Subsection 1, after 1 year from the date of any arrest, if no accusatory instrument was filed, number 2, with the consent of the prosecuting attorney at the time of the prosecuting attorney formally dismisses the entire criminal case on the record or at any time after acquittal. That's what we're adding to this. And what if you look at specifically in number 2, the entire criminal case has to be dismissed. And so I'm not looking to help people out that are speeding, swerving all over the road, or pulled over for open container and DUI, and because they've got a great lawyer, they're able to plead down 3 or 4 of those charges and then come back later because of this vehicle and ask for an expungement. The entire criminal case has to be dismissed. Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of those days where we all get to put a little star by our calendar and say that you've helped innocent people stay innocent and not allow their record and their good name to be besmudged by being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I ask for your favorable support of Senate Bill 78, and I would stand by for any questions.
Thank you, sir. Further remarks? Senator Hunstad.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I really have a question of the sponsor.
State your question, sir.
I would like to hear from him what the process might be to get this record expunged, if he could help me with that.
Senator Olson, do you care to answer the question?
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, do you mean currently or if we make this change?
If we pass this.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of ways that they could have this change that's still going to have to be reviewed, or they're going to have to make a request of the court to have the record expunged. And so all we're doing here is saying, keeping prosecutors happy and keeping defense attorneys happy by saying that it has to be with the consent of the prosecuting attorney.
Senator Hunstad, you have the floor.
Well, thank you for that answer. It is kind of surprising to me that that person would ever have to ask. If I was accused of doing something that I didn't do, I was arrested for something I didn't do, and then I was exonerated, it seems rather strange that we would even have to ask for record to be expunged. It seems to me that we ought to be required to clean up that person's record. Particularly, if I understand your story right, this person had a couple of years intervened before they realized that this was causing them a problem. They thought they were done with the problem. It was behind them. And now it becomes their problem again. So they didn't know in time. And now they have to go back and do this. I applaud you for bringing this. I am surprised, though, that we didn't go far enough to say this should be automatic. I'm not going to offer an amendment to do that here, but I well may speak with my House members to see if they can do that. And perhaps you think that's also a good idea, or you could explain to me why it is not. Otherwise, I'm done. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Further remarks? Does anybody wish to speak before Senator Olson speaks a second time? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. And, you know, The deal with good constituent bills like this is that you're not always privy to what the other House may or may not have done on the issue last year. And it sounds, you know, we had an expungement bill come, and it went through the Senate and was passed out of here last year and got over to the House and hit a train wreck. And so unbeknownst to me, all parties said we're going to back off expungement bills for next year, being this year. And so I come in with this one, which also raises the eyebrow again from the prosecutors thinking that the defense bar brought this, and that wasn't the case at all. It's seriously, it was a great constituent issue, and I ask for your support.
Thank you. Further remarks? Hearing no further remarks, the question before the Senate is final passage of Senate Bill 78. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Edelstein.
Aye.
Begalka.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buell.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Prisley.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Pauline.
Aye.
Hunstead.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Kraus.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Norstrup.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Brave.
Aye.
Roden.
Here.
Schleckaway.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Tiedemann. Thiessen.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Mr. President, there were ayes 34, excused 1.
Senate Bill 78, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, the title is deemed approved.
Senate Bill 93, an act to provide for the withdrawal of referred measures in certain circumstances.
Thank you. Senate Bill 93, having received a second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Senator Peters, good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon, Mr. President. Well, I brought Senate Bill 93 after a few of us were sitting around looking at election law. I know, exciting stuff, but when we were going through the chapters, we were noticing that there were three ways in which you can put items on the ballot. You have initiated constitutional amendments, you have initiated measures, and you also have referred laws. Then we got to looking at if there were mechanisms to pull them off if situations changed. We have mechanisms for the withdrawal of the initiated constitutional amendment, and we have a mechanism for withdrawal of an initiated measure. But there is no mechanism for pulling off a referred measure. And Senate Bill 93 deals with that. It creates the mechanism for those, for the instance in where we would need to pull a referred measure off the ballot. With two-thirds of the petition sponsors, it allows those folks who put a measure on the ballot to pull it in the cases where the legislature may have changed the circumstances of the bill which was put on the ballot to begin with. I think this is a good bill. It's going to hopefully clean up the ballot in those instances where we have issues that may or may not be relevant at the time when the ballot happens. So with that, I'd encourage your favorable support for Senate Bill 93.
Thank you. Senate Bill, further remarks on Senate Bill 93. Senator Hunstead, welcome back.
Thank you again, Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
I would have a question.
Yes, sir.
Of
state
the
your question, please.
My question would be, two-thirds of the folks would have to ask to get it removed. Is that my understanding? Because I'm reading it, and, you know, in order to refer a piece of legislation, it takes a lot of signatures. So does it take two-thirds of those people to now request it pulled, or how would that work?
Senator Peters, do you wish to answer the question?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes.
If you look on line 8 of Senate Bill 93, it talks about two-thirds of the petition sponsors, and that's the folks who actually are driving the petition to put it on the ballot. So it's not actually, you're not going to need to go and collect 10,000 signatures to pull it off the ballot. Just if there's three individuals that are responsible for putting it and collecting signatures, you only need two of the three to pull it off the ballot. Thank you,
Senator,
Mr. President.
Senator Hunstead, you have the floor, sir. Okay. Thank you, sir. Further remarks? Thank you both. Hearing no further remarks, the question before the Senate is final passage of Senate Bill 93. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Edelstein.
Aye.
Begalka.
Aye.
Bradford. Bradford. Bradford.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buell,
aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Frericks.
Aye.
Frisley.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Heinemann.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Hunstead.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Krause.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Norstrup.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Schleckaway.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Tiedemann. Thiessen.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Mr. President, there were ayes 34, excused 1.
Thank you. Senate Bill 93, having received a majority vote of the members-elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, the title is deemed approved.
Senate Bill 123, an act to revise how the taxes are applied to rural electric companies.
Thank you, ma'am. Senate Bill 123, having received a second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks? Senator Roden, good afternoon, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the Senate. It's my privilege, ladies and gentlemen, to bring to you Senate Bill 123. In the late 30s, the South Dakota legislature adopted a centrally assessed property tax administered by the Revenue Department for taxing both investor-owned and cooperative electric utilities. Because electric cooperatives had so much more investment per meter to deliver power to their members, the legislature reassessed their earlier decision and in 1941 adopted a gross receipts tax for electric cooperatives. Their motive was simple and clear, establishing equity in the way the investor-owned utilities and electric cooperatives were taxed. As you are aware, all taxes collected under the gross receipts tax go directly to the schools, school districts across the state as revenue outside the formula, other revenue dollars. The electric cooperatives have supported this process and are not advocating changing that arrangement. The fact that the system worked so well for decades validates the wisdom of the 1941 bill. Unfortunately, the rapidly rising wholesale power costs and regulatory compliance costs, many of which do nothing to increase power sales, are eroding the tax equity the South Dakota legislature established in 1941. Without changes, the problem will only get worse. Senate Bill 123 seeks to rebalance the scales in a manner that is both reasonable and sustainable for the schools and the electric cooperatives who serve over 300,000 of South Dakota citizens. Ladies and gentlemen, you have a handout on your desk with signatures from directors and managers of electric cooperatives across the state. These signatures represent 300,000 citizens in the state of South Dakota, all in support of this change. The co-op spent a great amount of time during the past 3 months meeting with the schools, legislators, and state leaders to properly vet this complicated issue. They should be commended for trying to educate all of us on this issue. I will close with this. Electricity is the path to technology. It's the most important energy in our economy. Electricity drives progress. Electricity drives education. I think, ladies and gentlemen, that if you boil this down and look at it in its most simplified form, we have a situation right now where 300,000 of our citizens are faced with an exponential tax increase, currently running at about 10% a year. This bill would change the way that tax is applied to buffer or temper that increase to a more sustainable, level form, if you will, estimated to be around 3.5 to 4%. And I want to also remind you that those numbers are not pie in the sky. They're not guesstimates. They're based on real numbers and real business model numbers. These cooperatives live and die by the numbers and the projections that they put forth. So, ladies and gentlemen, with that, I know there are a number of you that will probably wish to comment, but I would urge your support of Senate Bill 123. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further remarks, Senator Rampelberg.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, these darn bankers are kind of numbers people. And I've got some numbers that I want to share with you a little bit. You know, in my district, probably most of the people, they're not probably, most of the people in my district receive their electricity from a co-op. And I read with interest every month the newsletter that they send to me talking about what they're doing as it relates to supplying consistent power to me, but also what it's costing me. And they keep track of the amount of kilowatt hours that we burn, that we utilize. And they have an excellent method of keeping, of doing a cost accounting to know what it costs to produce that kilowatt hour. Right now, I pay roughly 8 cents a kilowatt hour when I turn my lights on. The competitors, that's not really right because they've already chosen sides and there's not going to be any changes. But let's say the investor-owned companies assess their taxes differently. Now, if you take a look at the handout that you all received, you'll notice over here in the fine print, down towards the bottom on the left-hand side, cooperatives pay locally assessed property tax, municipal franchise tax, sales tax, and other locally assessed taxes. What I'm saying is that we, on top of this gross receipt tax, there are plenty of other taxes. Now, guess who pays that? It's not the co-op, it's me. So when we start talking about who's paying this tax, it's me. And what I'm here to say today is that I don't think it's right that I am expected to have an average, the increase this past 10 years was 9.7% in what I'm paying in gross receipt tax. Okay? They're projecting ahead on the sheet that you see, it's going to be 6.7% in the next 10 years. I don't like to go back to my constituents and say I voted to keep your tax different from what you might get if you were in a community somewhere that was served by an investor-owned company. So my question is, what actually are we paying? Well, guess what? See that 3.7% on the other handout that's got the signatures? So what we're talking about per kilowatt hour is 0.0037. And Sarah Nolstrup, you're right. Inflation is an issue. We talked about this. But every co-op in our state is projecting increased demand for kilowatt hours. So we have a built-in inflation because we're going to be using more kilowatt hours. And fortunately, many of us took a tour of Basin Electric, which serves my constituents, and we see the plans that they've made. We see what it costs them right now to do business. But we also read in the paper about what some of the government regulations are going to be doing to them, the scrubbers, et cetera, that they have to place on their equipment. And they've done a good job of keeping track of how much a kilowatt hour and how much it will cost to do this additional equipment. So I ask that you vote in favor of this change to move from a gross receipts tax to a per kilowatt hour, knowing that it's going to be an increasing amount at a level that will mirror inflation, because that's what's going to happen with the more business you have, the more kilowatt hours you're going to burn, the more money we're going to have for the schools. But it's going to avoid my constituents from having to pay a tax on something that is directed by something other than the cost of that kilowatt hour. So I urge your support for Senate Bill 123. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Further remarks, Senator Hunstad.
Thank you, Mr. President. I try to do my best not to stand at this microphone very often, because if you're an expert on everything, you probably aren't an expert on anything, and I've done a really bad job today. I look down this list of signatures, and there's a lot of my friends there. I looked at this sheet, and in full disclosure, I'm one of the guys that receives the electricity, and I'm one of the guys that pays this tax one way or the other. I pay it. It's my electric company. Maybe I should recuse myself for this, because I could vote myself a nice little savings package here. The co-ops, in fact, have a problem. We property tax them in two different ways, and it's a pretty simple idea. Where we have facilities like the ones we can find, the little generator out there in the country, and we can find it, We assess it, and we call it centrally assessed, and we pay our property tax on that centrally assessed property. There is other property that's really hard to assess, like all the poles along the road and all the copper wire, and what would that be worth, and how is our assessor going to come up with the value? So for that, we have a different property tax, and that property tax is called... It's a sales tax. Looks like a sales tax. It's a gross receipts tax. The problem is this. When my co-op pays the centrally assessed tax, they bill it to me. The bill to me is a tax that I pay back, and that tax is a gross receipts tax. So I am paying tax on the tax I just paid. That's a problem. It's a problem that's driving this graph way out of shape. Our co-op has a good reason to say, wow, this tax is out of whack. It's going up way too steep. And they're right. However, I'm a no on this one. How could that be? From what I just told you, we need to control those rates. They're out of whack. Why would I be a no? I'm a no because I don't think this is the proper answer at this time, and I'll try to explain why. We charge most of the taxes in South Dakota, the ones we get by on, based on the cost of the item that you buy. If you buy a more expensive pair of shoes, you pay more tax. We're asking here in this case to quit doing that and to go to a per unit cost. So we're saying, if we did this across the state, we would say, hey, there's a tax on a gallon of milk. It's 4 cents or whatever the number is, and that's going to stay there. The more milk you drink, the more tax that comes in. But we're going to exempt it from increasing costs. So it'll... Now, we might try that somewhere in the state, and we have. We tax our gasoline tax exactly that way on a per unit basis. We charge our tax based on how many gallons you use. That seems like a pretty fair way to do it, because my bigger SUV uses more gallons, and I ought to pay more than the guy that's got the Volkswagen. And it sounds like a pretty good idea, but how has that worked for South Dakota? It's worked backwards. And frankly, you all know this. I believe we set that 22-cent tax when gas, raw gas, was about 60 cents a gallon. Our 22 cents tax was put on top of that, and that day customers paid 82 cents for a gallon of gas. When gas was $1.88, we added on our 22 cents and they paid two. When it was $2.88, we added on our 22 cents and they paid three, et cetera, et cetera. And then we discovered that it actually cost more money to fix the roads because the cost of oil had gone up. But our income had not gone up because it was based on how many gallons we sold, not on the cost of the gas. Our experiment with per unit taxes has gone awry. It's caused a huge problem in us being able to fix roads. I know the co-ops need an answer for this increasing tax, but a per unit tax is not the proper way to do this. It would be bad policy, even though it would be good for me personally, because my taxes could be kept down. I don't think we should go down this road, because I think other folks will say very rapidly, I want one of those per unit tax on what I sell, which is coats, or what I sell, which is whatever. Per unit tax sounds like a good answer. Today, the co-ops have done a good job of figuring it out backwards, so the number of dollars is the same today. What about 30 years from now? Will the number still be the same? And the answer is no. Thank you very much. I'd be glad to answer questions. Otherwise...
Thank you, sir. Further remarks? Senator Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll make some quick comments. From 2001 until 2010, the average annual increase has been 9.7% when we figure it on gross receipts. It's projected from 2010 to 2020 to increase at the average rate of another 6.7% from this point back in 2010. Means a huge increase in the cost of energy for those people here in South Dakota. At a time when we're having trouble, there are a lot of people in this great state who are having trouble finding the money to pay their utility bill each month, to pay for lodging, pay for utilities, and put food on the table. This bill not only helps our cooperatives, but also sets at a reasonable rate of increase at approximately average annual increase of 3.7%, the return on the taxes that will be shared with education. I just want to give you my perspective. I was born and raised in Turner County on a farm that did not have electricity until in the 1950s when we got electricity. So I grew up milking cows by hand and using kerosene lights in our home. We've come a long ways. The consumption rate has been increasing and continues to increase. Everything's run by electricity nowadays. We have from your toothbrush to the list goes on and on. Everybody now is using electric augers. We don't use the tractor with the PTO. We're using dryers to dry our grains because we can pick them earlier. We have larger per acre yields that require that we process this earlier. We have to spend money on that. It's all an increase in consumption. We have aging equipment. We also have new increases in technology that are costing more and more capital investments by our cooperatives across South Dakota. EPA currently has mandated a lot of increased costs for the generators of the electricity that our co-ops buy their energy from. All of this, and if we continue in the same vein that we're currently doing with gross receipts, would result in energy costs soaring over the next few years at a time when we have to hold those things down. The quality of life is what draws people to South Dakota and keeps people here, and our cost of living index. So this bill would help put a little bit more predictability in that rate of increase while still allowing our co-ops to function properly and keep that rural electric alive and healthy. And I urge your passage of this bill.
Thank you. Further remarks, Senator Frerichs, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think it's helpful for us to really zone in further on this 3.7% increase. And the example that I use is a real-life example as far as the increase in the amount of usage for electricity. A prime example, our neighbor that we have, along with our operation, we both use a leg system to move that grain. No matter if it is dry corn, wet corn, it all goes through that leg system. We no longer set up a particular auger to fill the bins unless we need to improvise if something isn't working properly. That's all run by electricity. And in that instance, when we first put our setup in, our neighbor already had his leg system. You know how it works. You have the friendly competition with neighbors, so we had to be much like him. But if both of us had our leg systems running at the same time, along with moving that grain, the lights in my folks' house would dim when you flip that switch. And if that doesn't tell you enough about the usage of electricity, because we both are fed on that same line, it's a prime example of how our kilowatt per hour usage has drastically increased here in South Dakota across our farm operations. Now, we are perhaps some of the first early actors in terms of utilizing these leg systems. There will be many more of those. Think back to perhaps your operation when you grow up or your grandparents or whoever else of the old WD-45 tractor powering an auger. Well, fortunately, those are being retired to little parades and things like that and used as more of an antique. And, of course, the auger system is not going to be utilized as much in the future. And so when you look at that 3.7% increase, it purely is based on the amount of growth that we will see and the amount of electricity that is utilized. And this is a very much consumer-driven piece of legislation because when folks out there our constituents want to make a decision on whether or not to retire that WD-45 tractor and auger system and move into today's technology of a leg-operated system with a pneumatic and all the electrical needs that are there powering those motors. They won't have to determine on what sort of environmental regulations that might boost that cost of electricity, but they can keep it very equitable to know that the amount of kilowatt hours that they plan to utilize will be on a per unit cost. And so with that, I ask for your support. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Further remarks? Senator Brown, good afternoon, sir.
Hello. You know, occasionally we get a bill that comes through here and you kind of feel like you're really between a rock and a hard place with where you're going to fall out on this. And as I have been listening to the debate, not only on this bill, but on some of the previous bills, there's a word that's kept coming up over and over again, and that word was constituent. And as that was said, I was starting to get a little nervous because as I was looking in the galley, about three-fourths of the galley was full of my constituents, not only some good members from our co-op board, but I'm looking up here off to the left, and we have the whole class from the Ipswich High School sitting up there, which are all constituents. And so as I'm looking at this bill, I've got to try to figure out which of the options, either yes or no, is going to best represent my constituents. I agree. I think the co-ops have demonstrated that they have a concern and that there's potentially a taxing problem here. I might actually share some of the same thoughts as Senator Hunt said. I'm not exactly sure this is maybe the best way to fix that. And then I look at the students, and I think this particular piece of legislation has the ability to take potentially millions of dollars and redirect them away from our public schools, hopefully back into the pockets of our electrical consumers. And at the end of the day, I think I've got to fall out on the side of the students on this one. That's not an easy decision to say, but until I feel secure that we've got a stable education funding formula, I'm not really willing to come down here and pick winners and losers on this particular issue, especially when it involves the children. So, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Further remarks? Does anybody wish to, Senator Hansen? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate. And over the past few years, I've probably taken as much of an interest in power issues as anyone. I've had a chance to go to various NCSL meetings and CSG meetings and have had responsibilities on other committees, but whenever I'm not in my committee of responsibility, the first choice to sit in on is those dealing with energy and power. You know, America is great because of access to affordable power. I think that's a pretty important thing for us all to remember. We are very fortunate to live in an area where I don't think that right now that access is being threatened. I like to have my deep freeze run 24 hours a day, and I like that to happen 365 days out of the year. But the comment that you just heard a little bit ago from the senator from Wilmot, we may be getting pretty close to the point of where we are using all of the power that we have access to. Okay, now you add to that the willingness of, you know, not only our rural electric providers, but also our investor-owned utility providers to maintain and keep the existing power-generating facilities up and running. That takes a lot of money if we're going to comply with all of these regulations, many of which I have opinions on, but it adds to the cost of delivering that power. What happens when we get to the point of where we are needing to add another plant? That is terrifically expensive. Now you look at the nationwide, you know, there are companies that are faced with, and I don't think it's just an idle threat of removing plants from service. I don't know that the people of America realize just how close some of our states and cities are to running out of power. maybe not necessarily completely running out, but when you have a rolling blackout or you have a brownout, that's a pretty serious deal. And so, like I say, we're fortunate to be able to continue to have access to power, but we also have to recognize the effect that that is having on the cost to the rate payer, as the Senator from Wall mentioned. And I'll once again go back to the thought that America is great because of our access to affordable power. I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Further remarks? Senator Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm conflicted. Half of my district is in the city of Sioux Falls that's serviced by Xcel Energy, and the other half of my district's serviced by Southeast. And as I listen to you all talk, there's one piece that still keeps sticking in the back of my mind. You know, we've talked about the education funding, but I just read online about Brookings just announcing today a new cheese plant, 350 to 400 jobs. Congratulations to the whole Brookings region for the success in landing a plant that's going to make little Baby Bell cheese. Anybody buy those? Yeah, I do too. So I look at Brookings getting a new plant, a new cheese plant. But then I look around all of South Dakota and the opportunities that lie in each one of our smaller communities. South Dakota has the best climate for tax, for incentives to bring more business to South Dakota. And a lot of that opportunity lies in our smaller communities. But also the large community like Sioux Falls, if you look at the continued growth and the sprawl that's coming from that, it's going to push off into areas that are serviced by our cooperatives, Southeast, Sioux Valley, and others. And the survival of our small schools are going to be dependent on the development of economic development opportunities like we're seeing in Brookings, like we see in Milbank, like we see in other small communities throughout South Dakota. And that's how I'm starting to look at this, because I've flip-flopped. Heck, I think I've changed my mind twice sitting here. Oh, there's others too, huh? But anyway, at the end of the day, folks need reliability. When businesses are starting in South Dakota, they need to know that they have reliability in their tax structure. They need to know they have reliability in their input costs, and they need to have reliability in energy costs. And the survival of our small communities, the survival of our small towns is dependent on these economic development opportunities. And so that's why, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to support this bill. Thanks.
Further remarks? Does anybody wish to speak before Senator Roden speaks a second time? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. A great debate. Senator Roden.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, thank you, members of the Senate. It's always encouraging to me to have a well-thought-out, meaningful debate on a subject that's well worth the debate. And so, in closing, I would just like us to regain a perspective and kind of wrap this up. First of all, as far as comparing this to a gas tax, you really are comparing apples to oranges. I mean, when you consider the wild fluctuations we've seen in our gas prices, depending on which Arab nation is scratching the other's nation back at the time, you know, and compare that to the stability that we have seen in the electric market, I just don't think it's even worth the comparison. Also, you know, just talking about constituents, and from a perspective on that, when we're talking about education funding, when we're talking about this as representing a tax increase, we are talking about constituents. We're talking about 300,000 taxpayers that have seen an exponential increase in their taxes, not by anything we've done, but mostly because of federal regulations from the EPA, who I believe have legislated through regulation, and those costs being kicked down to us directly, and it's hitting those 300,000 taxpayers right between the eyes. Those taxpayers are the parents of the kids that are in those schools. We're not asking them to
give up this revenue. We're not asking them to not expect increases in revenue. What we're trying to do is temper the increases that are going, that are being paid on the backs of our constituents, the parents of the children in those schools. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the right thing to do. It's the right time to do it. I'd urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any further remarks? Before I call the cadence, I'd like to inform the body that the President rules this requires a two-thirds majority vote under our Constitution. We'll stand by for an appeal. Hearing none, the question before the Senate is final passage of Senate Bill 123. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed nay. Requires a two-thirds majority vote for passage. The Secretary, please call the roll.
Adelstein. Begalka.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Brown.
No.
Buell.
Aye.
Cutler.
No.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Frisley.
Aye.
Gray.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Heinemann.
No.
Pauline.
No.
Hunstead.
No.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Krause.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Nordstrup.
No.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Olson.
No.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Rave.
No.
Roden.
Aye.
Schleckaway.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Tiedemann. Teason.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Adelstein.
No.
Mr. President, there were ayes 25, nays 9, excused 1.
Senate Bill 123, having received a two-thirds majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, the title is deemed approved. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 1014, an act to prohibit false statements on applications for certain loans, grants, or other financial assistance, and to provide a penalty therefor.
Thank you. House Bill 1014, having received a second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks?
Senator Gray. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, House Bill 1014 comes to you on behalf of the Governor's Office of Economic Development. It essentially creates a Class 6 felony, criminal penalty for making a material false statement of an important fact on when you apply for a loan with one of the state's loan programs. These loan programs are with the Board of Economic Development, the Department of Ag, Department of Environment and Natural Resources, and other agencies. If you've ever applied for a loan from a government agency, particularly a federal agency, you already know that making a false statement knowingly or intentionally to the federal government is a felony. This would make it also on the state level. There has been some questions in the past about the felony portion of this. A Class 6 felony carries with it up to 2 years in prison and a $4,000 fine or both. Really, in my mind, and I hope you agree, this is a bill about good stewardship of our tax dollars. These loan programs are funded by state tax dollars. And in the past, there's been a couple of occasions where people have basically lied on their loan applications. Oftentimes, when we're doing deals or the state is doing deals with people, they're from out of state. We don't know them like we do some of our neighbors around here. And so they fill out these applications, and we haven't had a lot of problems, but there's been a couple where they've misrepresented the facts intentionally. And so we want to take this step, make a criminal penalty for lying on these applications, and hope to stem that problem going forward. So with that, I ask for your support of House Bill 1014 and would stand by for any questions. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. Further remarks, Senator Adelstein.
This is an excellent bill. For a long time in South Dakota, We did business by handshake, and we knew each other, and we knew there was integrity. Somehow the time has come when we admire wealth without justice. And I think it is very important that a person who steals, either by holding a gun at someone's head, should be treated no differently than a person who holds a false statement to a state agency. Having served on the Ready Fund board and knowing that this has happened, I am very anxious to see this bill pass. This should be a felony.
Thank you, sir. Further remarks? Hearing none, the question before the Senate is final passage of House Bill 1014. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Adelstein.
Aye.
Bigalka.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buell.
Aye.
Cutler.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Frisley.
Aye.
Grave.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Heinemann.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Hunstad.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Krause.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Lederman.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Nordstrup.
Aye.
Nygaard.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Rave.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Schleckaway.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Tiedemann. Thiessen.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Mr. President, there were ayes 34, excused 1.
Thank you. House Bill 1014, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Are there any questions on the title? Hearing none, the title is deemed approved. The Constitution requires the presiding officer of the Senate to sign bills that have passed both the House and the Senate in open session. The President signing an act to revise certain provisions regarding references to the Internal Revenue Code. President is signing, Senate Bill 18. President is signing an act to repeal certain rules relating to the use of the Centennial logo. That's House Bill 1016. President signing an act to repeal the authorization to sell certain surplus real estate under the control of the Department of Corrections in Aurora County and Minnehaha County. And the President, House Bill 1024. President signing an act to expand the Board of Military Affairs, House Bill 1048. Wish to remind everybody, tomorrow is National Wear Red Day to raise awareness for heart disease prevention and treatment. So tomorrow is Wear Red Day. Other announcements, please. Senator Roden.
Thank you, Mr. President. A couple announcements. Catacomb Caucus, 7 o'clock, Governor's Large Conference Room tomorrow morning. Also later in the morning, Senate State Affairs, 10 o'clock.
Thank you, sir. Senator Hunoff.
Thank you, Mr. President. Health and Human Services tomorrow at 10.
10, Health and Human Services. Senator Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Taxation will meet at 10 o'clock tomorrow.
Senator Schleckaway.
Thank you, Mr. President. Local government at 8 a.m., not 7:45. 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
8 a.m., Senator Valley.
Senate Transportation, 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. President. We will conclude the appropriations hearing, joint appropriations hearings with the regents. Since the House is out, it will be 15 minutes after we adjourn. And tomorrow, 8:25 to 8:45, Governor's Office, 8:45, 9:15, Tribal Relations, 9:15, 10:30, Economic Development, and 10:30 to noon is Tourism in LRC 1 and 2.
Thank you, sir. Further announcements? Any further announcements? Madam Secretary.
Senator Holeen moves that the Senate do now adjourn.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. We are adjourned.